5 years ago, during the summer of a global pandemic and rising racial tension in the aftermath of police killings of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd, organizers in Ashland put up a makeshift T-shirt memorial with the names of dozens of Black lives lost due to racial violence. By the end of that year, they would add a local name. Aiden Ellison was a Black teenager in Ashland shot dead by a 50-year-old white man who became irate over Aiden's loud music and killed him. He's now serving a 12-year sentence. The Say Their Names T-shirt memorial was established in the railroad district along a chain-link fence. It has been repeatedly vandalized over the past 5 years, but now organizers have a more permanent solution. Joining me on the exchange to discuss the new memorial are my two guests. Gina Duquesne was elected to the Ashland City Council in 2020 and reelected in 2024. She also serves as president of Southern Oregon Pride. Welcome, Gina.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mike.
I'm glad to have you. And Emily Simon is the Emeritus Chair of Ashland's Social Equity and Racial Justice Advisory Committee. She joins me in the studio. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Mike. It's so good to be here.
Okay, so, well, let's get started with you, Gina. You were first elected to the City Council when the Say Their Names T-shirt memorial was established. Are you surprised it lasted 5 years?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. I was hopeful, as I believe we all were hopeful, but unfortunately, it was taken down, to my knowledge, at least 5 times. And so to have it vandalized and just defaced and stripped and taken down, it just, Mike, you know, that just made my, I can't express how it made me feel. And just your description of Aiden's murder and this man who took a life before it was even lived, that just, it's unreal to me. And my heart continues to go out to Aiden and his family. And, you know, years ago, when Black people were killed and lynched, the NAACP and others around the United States, Black folks would raise the flag, and that meant that another Black person was hung. And to be able to walk in Railroad Park and see all of the T-shirts with all of the names of people that we've lost way too soon was just, it was a reminder of where we've been and where we don't want to go and what we want to stop. And unfortunately, that reminder was taken down in a very cruel way. However, I am excited about what's going to happen on June 22nd.
Well, there are definitely voices on both sides of this issue, and I appreciate the work that you and Emily are doing. Emily, tell me about Ashland's Social Equity and Racial Justice Committee.
Sure. So the social race, the committee was birthed right at about the same time of Gina's first term on the Ashland City Council. And it was formed as a reaction to, although Ashland feels deeply, I think, from many good people in Ashland about social justice and racial equity, there was not a format or a forum for that to raise those issues in a systemic way, both in front of the City Council and in front of the community. So I first joined and was the chair when we actually were officially established by the City Council, and that was in 2021. And I have served on the committee continuously since then. I had assisted in writing the ordinance that created it, and I had been testifying for at least 2 years prior to that in front of the Ashland City Council about the importance of a governmental voice for Black people and other underrepresented populations in Ashland, so there was an official means for issues to be addressed.
So let me ask you this one. People approach you and ask you what social equity is. How do you respond?
That people, fairness and opportunity equals social equity. Mm-hmm. So if you look at it in the broadest possible picture, and then you narrow it down, so what is fair in this instance? What is equitable in this instance? Did a person miss an opportunity that they would have otherwise been able to have because of the color of their skin, because of their gender orientation, because of their religion, because of their sexuality, because of their poverty? So does city government and or the population of the city of Ashland do things that prevent people from fully participating in the social fabric and governmental fabric of life?
So equitable access to resources and opportunity.
Correct.
And Gina, how do you respond when people ask you about racial justice? What is it?
Racial justice, to me, is, and I want to thank Emily for everything that she said, because I echo that. And racial justice to me is access. It's level playing fields. It's the ability to do what, to have access to everything that everyone else has, no boundaries. And, you know, everything in the world is so systemic, and it can be systemically good or systemically bad. And when I look at where we are right now, we have such a long way to go, not just in Ashland, but throughout the United States, throughout the world. There is such an opportunity of growth right here. And I'm hoping that Ashland's officials, that Ashland's people can come together and spearhead something that can have a ripple effect throughout Oregon, West Coast, and so on. It begins just that simple. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can look at what's happened before and change that. And if we don't know our history, then we cannot be aware of what is possible, positive and negative, for the future.
My guests are Ashland City Councilor Gina Duquesne and Emily Simon, Emeritus Chair of Ashland's Social Equity and Racial Justice Advisory Committee. Emily, why is this memorial important?
Having a permanent plaque, having something that will be there, Mike, that will outlive me and you and even Gina, one of my heroes. Having something that is permanent, that some little person one day can walk by and say to whoever they're with, why is this here? Who are those names that are there? Who's Lorraine Hansberry? What does that mean? And it's the opportunity to teach people not only about their history, but, and I'm going to be really honest here, Mike, as history is attempting to be erased right now in this country, this feels even more important to me, that we are celebrating the black lives of not only individuals who have lost their life to police violence and other violence, but it's for all black lives that have been lived in Ashland and in other places. And for somebody like Lorraine Hansberry, with an absolutely fabulous body of work that was cut short at age 35 because she died of pancreatic cancer, to have a black woman who also identified as a lesbian on the street, on the sidewalk in Portland, Oregon, with her wonderful quote, I think is crucial so that the next time a person wants to just take down a T-shirt and thinks it changes the narrative, it doesn't change the narrative.
Wow. Gina, what does this memorial mean to you?
This memorial, to me, it's something that you mentioned earlier, is that the death of so many people. And when George Floyd got murdered, we in Ashland Black people and our allies had nowhere to go, had no place that was already established that we could go and we could sit and we could mourn and we could be in community. This is the beginning of being in community. This is the beginning of a place where Railroad Park was made sacred because of the Say Their Name to me. And so because of that memorial and being able to put this plaque right there on the sidewalk before entering Railroad Park, I believe that it's located in the historic district in Ashland, and more too shall be revealed about the upcoming things that are going to be placed in and around Railroad Park. So having it there in this historic district with so much history is so important now and forever. Like Emily said, when we are all gone, that will still be there. No matter how people feel or don't feel about it, it will still be there. And for that, I will always be grateful for, And this plaque and what it stands for, it gives Black and Brown and it just in our allies a place where we can go and we can be and we can feel safe. And this is what Ashland, this is who we say we are. Then let's be who we say we are.
Emily, can you tell me more about the unveiling of the memorial, when and how?
Sure. So the first, I want to just say something else to back that up, Mike. The people who worked on getting this plaque has been a wonderfully diverse team of both city councilors, city committees, city employees have really gone out of their way, and city dollars. And I think that should really be mentioned. And to just sort of have the plaque go into the ground and not do a celebration for it felt really like we were selling ourselves short, as it were. And it was really an opportunity for people to come together, and I keep coming back to this, especially in this day and age, and celebrate a unity moment, a collaborative moment, a coming together in a moment, felt really important. Now I'm going to answer your question, which is, it's on Sunday, June 22nd, as in this coming Sunday, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we will be unveiling the plaque, cutting a ribbon for it, have speakers that we hope represent a broad diversity of people who helped do the plaque, and have cookies and iced tea. And we really encourage everyone to come out and share on a Sunday afternoon a few moments, maybe meet somebody you haven't met before, and celebrate this wonderful thing. The timing on this, in terms of it being June 22nd, could not be more important, because Juneteenth is on a Thursday night, and we felt it was very important to try to make sure we could get people there. And we don't want to do anything, and this is my plug, to interrupt the base celebration in Medford on Saturday, June 21st at Pear Blossom Park. So June 22nd, Sunday, was the natural date.
Okay, so we've got about a minute left before we have to take a quick break. Tell me about the plaque itself.
Okay, the plaque itself was designed by artist Micah Blacklight, who is a prominent young man, artist, designer, man about town in Ashland. And the sculpture and the foundry of it in bronze was done by Jack Langford, who was a very, very well-known bronze artist. The quote from Lorraine Hansberry on it is, "One cannot live with sighted eyes and feeling heart and not know or react to the miseries which afflict this world."
My guests are Ashland City Councilor Gina Duquesne and Emily Simon, Emeritus Chair of Ashland's Social Equity and Racial Justice Advisory Committee. So before the break, we were talking about this new memorial plaque that's going to be unveiled on June 22nd at 2 p.m. with cookies and drinks. Right, Emily?
Yes, and speakers and a big red ribbon and a pair of scissors to cut it.
How long have you lived in Ashland?
Since 2010.
And how would you describe this community from your vantage point?
I think that this community has a very good citizen base. I think there are people who care. I think it's an artistic community. I think it's an outdoor community. And I love living here. What I don't like about living here is what I have been trying to address, is that there is systemic exclusion of people of color that is a very difficult barrier for people of color to break down. And I do not appreciate how, and I think I'm the same way, Mike, but I do not appreciate how many of my fellow very good people cannot recognize that. And I know that for myself, there are times when I don't fully understand and appreciate the barriers. So I love living here, and I love the opportunities that it gives me, and I would love it even more if I saw more black, brown, and yellow faces on the streets of Ashland.
And so you become an agent of social change.
I have tried. I think I've always been an agent of social change. I think the moment I was born, I've been hollering. But I would like to think I can help, if not exactly social change, maybe social modifications. That's what I'd like.
And Gina, same question. From your vantage point, what does Ashland feel like as a community?
From my vantage point, especially as of late, it seems that we say one thing to another. I know some very good citizens and good people who are just, you know, honestly good people, and what they don't know, they're learning. And that applies to all of us, not just black people, white people, or shall I say not just white people, but for all of us, what you don't know, learn, be curious, and be that advocate that you and Emily were talking about. But I see a lot of, yeah, we're this and we're that, but are we really? What I advocate for is to walk the walk and talk the talk, or say, or don't do it at all. So going back to the plaque and to say their names and the community that is engaged, we have to keep moving. We have to keep moving. We have to keep educating ourselves. And when I say moving, I mean that in all the best ways, because you can read a book, you can go to a class, but if you don't walk the walk and if you don't engage, and how can we get people who are diverse here? You need to see yourselves. You need to hear yourself in the music and see yourselves in the communication. And how do we attract people? If I go somewhere and I hear certain music, oh, okay, this is a good place. If I see people acting and welcoming me in a certain way, it's a safe place. When you walk into a place and people say one thing and do another, then that's just a rerun of so much that we've seen before. And I don't want Ashland to be that place. Well, I don't want Jackson County to be that place.
Well, along those lines, Oregon Shakespeare Festival, along with SLU, these are the two big engines of social change here, welcoming and belonging and finding efforts toward racial equity. But Nataki Garrett, who was the former director at OSF, left here with threats to her life. Mm-hmm. She didn't feel safe here.
Mm-hmm. No, she didn't, and I can understand that. you know, and I can understand that, and it surprises me. Well, no, it doesn't surprise me. That after the fact, what have we learned from that? Is Ashland folks, what have we learned from that? What have we taken away? And I think nothing. It's kind of like she's gone. It's over. Let's not talk about it. Sweep it under the carpet. It's done. And it's not done. To me, this is a wound that has been left open. And this is a discussion that's needed because we don't have the time to sweep things under the carpet. We don't have the time to overlook things. We need to sit down, talk about it, discuss it. What does it look like? How does that make you feel, white and black people? And it just kind of goes back to Aiden. When Aiden was murdered, I'm like, where are our allies? Where are these people? And I realized in time that if you don't know what to say, a lot of people say nothing. So in Nataki's absence, you know, we can't sweep that under the carpet. We know why she was run out of town. We know how she felt. We know the circumstances. And if you don't understand, then do your best to understand. Ask a question. Mike, I am an open book. I would much rather people ask me a question than to assume something.
My guess.
And, yeah.
My guests are Ashland City Councilor Gina Duquesne and Emily Simon, Emeritus Chair of Ashland's Social Equity and Racial Justice Advisory Committee. To your point, this conversation needs to be had. And there's this ongoing debate throughout the country about what the country was and what it is and what it could be. How's that debate going in Ashland, Emily?
Oh, I think that debate is not being addressed. I think this goes back to what Gina was saying in terms of, I think there are very good and well-meaning people here. And I think that they may talk about those issues in their living rooms, okay, or with people who they already know. But in terms of a cross-community conversation, and this goes back to what Gina was saying about Nataki Garrett and what happened with her. And again, maybe it's because I was a lawyer for more than 50 years. I look at the systemic nature of this. And I think for Ashland, the systemic nature of how Ashland thrives is by believing things, good things about people, and then not having a venue to be able to put them into practice. And then not being there to protect somebody when things happen. Mm. I don't think we're addressing it. Would have been a short answer.
Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room. This past weekend, millions of people joined in the No Kings protests mm-hmm. that took place across 2,000 cities. And there were about 4,000 protesters just down the street in Medford, according mm-hmm. to police estimates. Gina, what are your thoughts?
It made me so proud. It made me proud, gave me hope. It lets me know that, yes, we can. And so for that, I am very excited. And when I saw what showed up from Medford to Ashland to Grants Pass to New York to L.A. to D.C., I was just like, yes. So for me, it gave me hope. And that's something that I hold on to because, you know, all of that, everything that's happening in the world from a local level to a federal level, I believe that we can be that change. And I believe that we can truly work on systemic kindness. That is my hope because, in the words of Dr. King, my favorite quote is, I don't care what ship you got here on, we're all in the same boat now. And when I saw those protesters, I was like, yes. So it truly gave me hope, and it made me want to roll up my sleeves and let's get busy. Let's do more.
Okay. Well, I've got a big question here. I'm going to pose it to you, Emily. The last three presidential elections have produced a stark racial division that the national media has not covered and appears reluctant to cover. On average, the majority of white women voters have supported Trump by 53% three times in a row. And white women are the largest voting demographic in the nation. At the same time, black women have opposed Trump and the Republican Party by an average of more than 90%. And black women represent the largest non-white voting demographic. So we watched this past weekend Trump sitting at a sparsely attended Army tank parade in D.C. on his birthday, while millions protested across the nation. And a lot of those protests were organized by white women, while black women were largely sitting this one out. How can we bridge the communication gap between black and white women in Southern Oregon?
Wow. I'll say your wow back to you that you said to me before, Mike. Mike, I wish I had either a glib or a practiced answer to that question, but I don't. And I think the reason for why I don't is because women, the way in which women have been oppressed, all women, white women and black women, in this country since its founding, and in fact in the world since its founding, leaves permanent and lasting reaction to both trauma and oppression. And one of the ways in which people respond to trauma and oppression is actually by seeking to identify as much as they can with the oppressor. And that's what I think is going on for a lot of white women who support Trump. It is the most safe place that they could possibly be based upon their own history of oppression, whether they recognize it or not. Now, that is spoken like a true elitist when I say that in terms of people recognizing it. And it's this intellectual thing that they may not recognize. I'm going to compare it for just a moment to black women, although I probably should not speak for black women as I have a white skin. And I don't know what they go through. But nonetheless, I believe that their oppression is so real and so everyday, and the amount of lack of safety that they would feel, and at the level of Nataki Garrett, all the way down, I mean, for anybody, any black woman who walks the street or lives this life, they know that oppression not just in their brains, but they know it throughout their whole body. And I do not see where there can be an easy bridge for those two issues and for those two groups of people. And I wish I knew the answer, but I don't.
Well, Gina, we have about 90 seconds, and so I'm going to pass this over to you because at the end of the day, you're a black woman. You know the pains of oppression, but you don't identify with Trump.
No. Not at all. And honestly, just looking at this man's character and his lack of values and who he is and what he has done to the people of the United States of America and black people and brown people who I can't even get into that right now.
And transgendered.
Our trans community, it's everyone is running scared, it seems. And there's a level of fear that he has impacted with so many marginalized people. No, I don't identify with Trump. I don't know how any woman could ever identify with Trump. And I appreciate Emily bringing our trans sisters into the conversation because a woman is a woman. And he is, in his mind, I believe he's above the law. And I just don't understand how any female can identify with him, and I never will.
Okay, on that
Either
note,
will I.
On that note, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we run out of time. Time and place for the unveiling on June 22nd?
Railroad Park, 2 o'clock. Hope to see everybody there.
Okay, thank you both.
Thank you.